Welcome back to Go Forth and Nerd. This is Jesse Bray, also known as Mr. Bray, and today I have my buddy Bruno Pierce on. How you doing, Bruno? You want to say hello?
How's it going, everyone? It's good to be here.
Yeah, so we're just gonna talk some nerd. Talk about talk some nerd. So Bruno, if you can recall, do you remember how we actually became kind of internet buds? How that sort of started?
I know it was going through Instagram, and I saw some of your low poly portraits, and I really dug that. That style, and so I just started following you. I think you followed back, and you know that's pretty much the story of how we came to know each other. Ta-da! You know.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I mean, like as far as social networks go, I think Instagram was the one that finally clicked for me. Because we're both designers, so we kind of have to pay attention to whatever's happening. Not really because we care, and not to sound mean, but we just got to be there because a client or someone's going to say, this is the new it thing. But Instagram was the first time where I got on there. I was like, hey, there's like a community of people that aren't trolls. And it's
like, which is very rare.
Yeah. I could be creative. I could be personal. It just hit all those marks. I believe what I remember is like, so when I was like massively into the pixel art thing, that's when your stuff caught my eye. And I think it was the Perler stuff for sure. Now you definitely do a lot more than just Perler art. It was nerdy and it hit the same vein. So I'm like, yeah, this is great stuff. Bruno has some really fun, really, really cool stuff. And you kind of take your Perler art to like another level with the presentation, at least from what I've seen.
I try to, I think a lot of people, and this is something I really noticed that a lot of conventions and just online, I think, a lot of people are just satisfied with, copying a pattern and kind of ironing it and being done with it. But to me, I mean, I went to art school, I minored in graphic design. So, for me, craft, and being a perfectionist in your craft was kind of drilled into me through art school. It wasn't, we're talking like, I remember I had a visual thinking class, and in this class, one of the first projects we had was to cut this board, basically a 4x4 board.
Okay.
Had to be exactly 4 inches by 4 inches. We're talking like if it was a millimeter off, we were getting grade deductions. And so that was the kind of level of detail that they really drilled into us at that stage. And this was our first project. And we're like, oh my goodness, if I don't cut this exactly right, like, it's just my life's going to end. Kicked me out of the program. So, luckily that didn't happen. But, I just think that you can do so much with it. You don't just have to, kind of do the pattern, iron it, and be done with it. You can, do something interesting with the background. And so, I've tried to do a lot of vector work and kind of merge those two together. This idea of taking something from the pixel world, bringing it to the physical world through Perler beads, and then taking a pixel world background and then doing a vector form of that, which is like the exact opposite of what pixel art is, vector art. So, I like to do that kind of thing and just, see what I can do. And I'm inspired by people like Papa's Parlor and, way that he just incorporates things into oil paintings. I've been getting into that a lot lately. I look in the local thrift stores around Portland, which there are tons. Catching any there's so much art out there that's just kind of laying around like at thrift stores or consignment shops, and to kind of repurpose that and bring new life into it is pretty interesting to me, because a lot of that stuff just goes unknown and just collects dust in the in the background of these stores until someone's like, I'm done with this. Let's just throw it out or whatever. So, bringing it back to life and letting someone look at this in a different way is pretty interesting to me. It, you know, it catches someone's eye and you're like, whoa, you know, I may not have ever looked at that, you know, oil painting before, but you know, with a pixel character in there, you know, it's totally interesting. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's like, that's where like the presentation, there's a lot of little fun little notes. I kind of want to talk about that. So I have a friend of mine. She does the kind of found art, sort of picks up, paintings at thrift shops, and she puts nerdy stuff on it, like nerdy spins. And she's got one where it's like kind of like a golf course, and then there's like a Millennium Falcon in the background, and like, you know, like that kind of, you know, like she'll paint like Nessie in some random like Kincaid type painting. Oh, it's just great, because like before it was, you know.
Is she on Instagram?
Yeah, is this
a Portland local?
Well, she's actually up here visiting. Her name is Haley Dixon. You should check it out. I'll give you a link to her account because I cannot remember her handle for the life of me at the moment. And she's been friends with me for like 10 years, so I should know. But I don't remember. You just see your friend, like, yeah. So like she does this fun stuff, and I love the idea of taking something old and kind of like taking a spin on it. And then when I did pixel art, that's really what was my idea. When I used to think like, because I start with a place where, what's something I haven't seen before? You know, when I used to do music, that was what I tried to do, and I definitely didn't do that. But with art, at least if you try hard enough, you can create new things.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, you take design school, because, you know, Bruno and I both going to design school, I kind of want to unpack some of the vocabulary for people who aren't familiar. In design school, they sort of like, they follow this kind of idea from what's called Bauhaus. And Bauhaus was like the original design college before the Nazis rolled in and kicked everybody out. But so that's the skinny of it. But the idea about design is that design is about solving a problem, while art is about expressing something. And so because the design school has these principles, they're really kind of anal about learning how to use proper craft skills. And so I remember sleepless nights, like, oh my God, I have to mount this thing right, or, you know, make sure none of this glue shows up on my, you know, on whatever letter that you have to draw and mount. And it overall, everyone else is doing the same thing, and we're stressed out of like this stuff. But here's something I want to give you a compliment. I think Bruno has really mastered this, because you take this blend of your like knowledge of both physical art and digital art. And see, that's something where my art is digital to the core. I get the hankering, you know, like, oh man, I can't wait to just try out some raw media. And then I hate it. I hate it. It's messy. It just gets everywhere. And it's like, no.
So paint and
yeah, it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah. So,
but your art blends that. Like, so Bruno's work, he blends that perler stuff, so you have sort of the familiar kind of perler craft that you get the textural quality, but then you blend it with a packaging. It's very cool. It feels official. Right? It's just like, you know, yeah.
Yeah, we, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I really tried to do when we started. You know, I wanted to separate myself from everyone else that does perler art, because there's a lot of people. And it's not that, you know, I think one of the things that really drew me to it was, I liked taking something that was in the digital world and bringing it into a physical space. That was interesting to me.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so many video games that I grew up on where I just love the sprites. You know, the first one that comes to mind is like Turtles in Time.
Oh, great game.
I mean, that was the first perler set that I did, and I've got it mounted like right here on my wall. I'm looking at it, and
awesome.
You know, I painted the backgrounds and everything like that. And I've tried to like, you know, set them up to sell them before, but I always put the price way too high because I'm like, I don't really want to sell these. You know what I mean? So if I part with them, then it'll at least be with, you know, a good penny. But
oh, that's awesome.
You know, I don't mind at all that they're sitting here, because, you know, it's really what brought me into it. And then, you know, my wife helps me and does the perler art with me.
Oh, nice.
And it's something that she can do as well. So, you know, oftentimes I'll do a pattern or something like that, and she'll say, "What do you want me to do?" And so, you know, we have this huge Google Drive of, you know, just tons and tons of patterns that we can just cool. look through, and, you know, at any point just pick out and kind of do. So
nice.
You know, we really enjoy it.
So you and your wife are the crafty power couple.
Yeah, we frequent Michael's quite a bit.
Oh, we're
probably on a first name basis with Michael's. I don't know what his first name is.
It's Michael's. Kay, it's Michael Michaels. Mr. Michaels to you.
Yeah, Mr. Michaels, but so I, you know, we definitely try and, you know, do interesting things or paint or whatnot. We had a Bob Ross night, you know.
Oh, one night, nice.
Where, you know, they you can find like Bob Ross on Netflix. So we,
yes.
You know, that was, we just picked out an episode we liked and got some oil paints. By the way, he uses so much oil, like so much paint. Like, it's ridiculous because we got like, you know, kind of like one of those intro sets.
Yeah. Which
definitely is not enough for like two people. It's like enough for a small painting. But when you look at like the kind of like the amount of paint that he has on this huge canvas, and it's, you're like, oh my goodness, there's so much paint on there. No wonder it's easy for him. Like, so
Bob Ross, yeah.
A lot of fun.
Well, I would say, like, Bob Ross is, there's enough oil painting, a BP oil spill is enviable. So it's...
Exactly.
Wow. Well,
he used to be a drill sergeant.
Oh, really? Whoa.
Yes, he did. He used to be a drill sergeant, and he got out, when he got out of the military, that's where he learned to paint. So quickly, he would only have like, you know, half hour at a time or whatever to really paint. So he developed this really quick style of painting, and he vowed that when he got out of the military, that he would no longer yell or raise his voice or anything like that, which is why he's so soft-spoken and, you know, why he's got that cool tone to him. So. Yeah. Yeah, that's, it just sounds like the complete opposite of what Bob Ross would do.
Yes.
Would do for anything, you know.
That's crazy. But I mean, it's like, in my mind, I was like, Bob Ross being a drill sergeant? That sounds like the, you know, the Dalai Lama used to be a porn star. Like, that does not work. It's like, that is just so out there.
It really is.
Because he's so zen. He's like, he's so incredibly zen. Like, I mean, my wife, Katie, she's probably more addicted to watching Bob Ross than I am, but I do enjoy, I grew up with Bob Ross. But she'll put him on there and she'll just knit away, and she's like, just happy little, just knitting away. And we're really big in crafts too. But my wife is the physical thing. I'm more like, you know, whatever I can design on a computer, I'll hand her way. But this one thing, do you and your wife do cross stitching, or have you ever played with that?
I think she might have done it when she was a child.
Okay.
I never got into cross stitch. I mean, it's the same basic principle.
Pixels and but
yeah.
So here's the thing, like, I'm just gotta throw it out there. So I think it's called Stiach. It's this crazy cross stitch along kind of thing that my wife does, and they'll start off with part of a pattern. So maybe you should do this for your pop art thing. But you start out with part of a pattern that you have to do, and basically each week they get another, like, these are the colors you need, this is the pattern you're going to do, and they don't tell you what the image is. So they don't tell you what it is, and you find out as you put the whole thing together.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's like, wow, that's so cool. I mean, kind of cool if someone did that with beads.
That is a really good idea.
Yeah, you're welcome.
What are we making this week?
Yeah, but like, you know, like, bead along. So it's like, here you go.
Definitely.
So, yeah, anyways, I play with it. Again, I dabble with the crafts to find out that I'm horrible at them. But, you know, like, I think I made, like, one Space Invader and cross stitch. Like, that's amazing. Done. It's like, not going to do
it. Good enough for me.
Yeah, not for me.
Not a t-shirt. You know, I've experienced that. Moving on now.
Done. Okay. because we both live in Portland, and this is a kind of a rare thing for the podcast, we both had that snowpocalypse, at least for us, the equivalent of snowpocalypse. Yes. And so,
which is funny because we had just moved up here from the Bay Area of California.
Oh.
So we hadn't been in Portland very long. And so the fact that this was our first, like we originally lived on the East Coast. So like okay. I was born and raised on the East Coast and we moved out to California in like 2012.
Oh.
So I thought my days of seeing snow were over unless I like visited Tahoe or went way, way up north or whatever. And they're like, oh yeah, Portland gets like, it doesn't get any snow at all. They're like, there's they don't even have snow plows because they don't need them. And I'm like, okay, yeah, no big.
Yeah.
No big, so
snowpocalypse. Yeah. Well, with mild winters and mild summers, it's like, oh, where are you moving to, Hobbiton? So it's like, you know, it's like, yes. Wrong. Well, at least, you know, whatever. The world, the weather is changing.
Yes.
But yeah, so I was going to say about the snowpocalypse. That's when, you know, my wife and I, we'll be in August, we'll have been married for 10 years. And so, thank you.
That's
a solid. So, 10 years.
Yeah, right on. How long have you guys been together?
10 years and 3 months. So, maybe a little less. But yeah.
Yeah, you knew. You were like, this is it.
Oh, this is it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, our story is kind of fun. I used to play music. I'll get back to my other point, but I used to play music, and I saw her at a coffee shop, and I was like, "Whoa, she's like a tractor beam hotness." And we started dating, and within a month and 2 days, we were engaged, and less than 3 months, we got married.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I guess when you know, you know.
Totally.
So, yeah. But anyways, I was gonna say, so we've been together for 10 years. And about maybe year two at the most, maybe year one or two, she got into knitting. She just got the knitting bug and she's like, I want to knit. And, and ever since then, she's like, you know, kind of like, this is the passive little thing, like, you know, you want to learn to knit kind of thing. And of course, trying to be a good husband, I've always had to keep some sort of savvy about what my wife's into because, you know, I got to buy her something that she wants. And so I would make sure like, okay, does she have this equipment? So I was familiar with it. But anyway, snowpocalypse buckled me. I finally got buckled and I learned how to knit. And not like I even like picked up some crocheting and it's like,
oh, nice.
And so I started making some stuff. I'm like, dude, like there is a total zen. And like, this is the first physical craft that I actually started to like. And the thing is, it's very similar to like purl or cross stitching. Cause you're just sort of like, you're just doing the one little repetitive thing. You have a pattern in mind and you're just going to town.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's a zen to it. And I would assume there's probably an equal zen where you guys are watching Bob Ross and you're working on a pattern, you know, just
totally.
a peaceful evening.
Yeah, exactly. We do it while we're watching TV.
Yeah.
And we'll just sit there and kind of, you know, do a pattern or whatever. And we'll stack up and we kind of save the ironing for, you know, another time. And we set aside like a night where we're going to like iron everything. And so, you know, it becomes like a, you know, like a little routine or whatnot. That's probably the least like fun part about perler beads is like ironing, but you know, it's also where, you know, that's where the kind of craft comes into it.
You know,
that's where you really can separate yourself. So, that's super important to us, you know, the ironing process, but it is a hassle always. I think it is for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure if you're, if you follow, my buddy, David Nielsen.
Yes, I do.
He does these.
Oh my goodness. Yes. And I tell you, he's definitely one of the people I look to in terms of like, ironing consistency.
Yeah.
You know, and I look at like a lot of, I think he recently got like a heat press, like
yes.
a t-shirt heat press or something, which I thought was brilliant. I was like, oh my goodness, that is such a good idea.
Because
like, especially if it irons evenly, like I use a cheapo Meepo iron, but I make it work, but
yeah.
you know, it's, it's nothing special. It's just flat, but it definitely doesn't doesn't heat evenly across the entire thing. So David's work is amazing, and I would say he's probably another like ironing perfectionist.
Yeah, he's amazing, and like we've had lots of fun conversations on the podcast, and one episode we were talking about more recently how he got a sponsorship, which is actually kind of fascinating.
Yeah,
and he got it by being a fan, you know, and he kind of sent a love letter to his favorite bead place, and it's like, you know, like I feel like. I love seeing that because, like, he not only does, like, I'm a fan of David's stuff, and that's how I found him. I'm a fan of Bruno's stuff. That's how we found each other. But even we have our – everyone has a fan, right? So everyone has something someone that inspires us as an artist. And I love – like, to me, that's the best. That, to me, that's the ultimate reward when you do something that inspires other people.
Definitely.
And – so that ties into like the fact that, you know, you and your wife as the power couple, the power crafty team. So like I just gotta ask, because like I love my wife to death, but when it comes down to like working together, that sort of deadline, I don't know if that would be healthy for us. I mean, little example. Whenever we go to IKEA, because, you know, we make the mistake and gotta go to assemble a couch or something like that. We don't do it as often, but basically the way it would work is I'd bring home the thing from IKEA and Katie would go, okay, you go pick up some food and I'll get started. And so, like, she's the more technical, mechanical kind of hands-on person, and I can just sort of brute strength or whatever.
Sure.
So, because we discovered that we're crafting together, or even assembling IKEA furniture as a craft. It's better to not be hungry. So,
well, yeah, we don't want anybody being hangry.
So, what do you and your wife do to avoid the hangry coworker sort of thing?
Well, being well fed is definitely a must. she helps me with every aspect of Pierce Pop Art, which, you know, I might be the beard on the icon in terms of, you know, designing stuff or whatnot, but, you know, she's there with me. You know, she helps place the beads on the pegboard for smaller patterns. She helps me through the ironing process. She'll sit there and, you know, kind of cut up the individual pieces of ironing film that we use specific to each project, and then nice. She, you know, kind of moves them in place, and she delivers all of the packages to, you know, UPS and stuff like that. Anything that goes out, I package it up. She kind of, you know, delivers it. So we're very much a team dynamic for us. So, you know, I don't even see it as, we don't really kind of get in that bicker mode or anything like that. Like, we work well together and we know our roles and we try and, you know, fulfill them, you know, appropriately. So I definitely could not do without her. I mean, she's definitely the one that, like, she's the other half of the team. So, you know, she's super important to that.
Well, and that, you know, I always find it interesting, the dynamic that people have when they work together. I mean, my wife and I, we play well together, really well. You know, we're best friends. But if we had to, like, I just feel like sometimes that stress, I'm not sure if it would be healthy. But I think the best we've done is, like, recently we did one of those escape rooms.
Oh, cool. Yeah. How was that?
That was really cool. I don't want to give it away, because just in case you end up taking it, you're like, dang it, Jesse gave away the whole escape room. but like, there's something really great about, like, when you're all together and you got like 10 minutes to get through this part of the puzzle. And I do feel like that's like a healthy way of like working together. And I wish there was more opportunities. I mean, if I had like more opportunities to put escape rooms and like everything, like, you can have your meal, but there's an escape room to get to it. Like, so, yeah. That's
maybe
really
your
fun.
Your wife can set up an elaborate escape room in the middle of the night when you have to use the bathroom.
That's right. You at Taco Bell, but first get through the escape room. It's like, I don't know. You better line that escape room with toilet paper. But anyways, that's cool. Another thing I wanted to kind of transition to. You talked about being on the East Coast, and where about was that?
So I grew up in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia. Oh. So I was about an hour outside of DC and Baltimore.
Okay. Nice.
And I lived there all my life. I lived there until 2012, and then I never wanted to live there. You know, I always tell people, they're like, but you know, it's so beautiful. They always say, well, it's so beautiful. And I said, yes, it is very beautiful, but you don't want to live there. I said, that's why the state song Country Roads is written from the perspective of someone who no longer lives there
anymore. To leave it.
He says, Country Roads, take me home. He doesn't say, get me the heck out of here. So,
oh, John Denver.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Oh, okay. I have to just deviate for a second, because do you like folk music, I assume, because you mentioned Don
Denver? I like just about everything. Okay. I really do. Everything except for country. I'm not really big into country.
So, country music, when it comes to country music, I don't like what people call pop country.
When I think of country, I think of, you know, more like, I mean...
trucks and cars and...
the kind of pop country now is not really my favorite. I mean, I dig Garth Brooks.
Oh, who doesn't, right?
Ben Campbell, yeah. Like, that's really old, like, country music, if you really want to call it that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It's. I mean, the thing is, to me, like, more pop country, I don't really pay attention to. I usually find that, like, yeah. But anyways, the point I was going to say is about folk music. I love folk music, and I go through these, like, tangents on Spotify. I'm like, today is a folky day, or today's an 80s new wave ska day, you know, like, you know, that, yeah. But I was doing this thing, like, I was just listening to a bunch of Jim Croce and John Denver and all this sort of stuff. I'm like in this like total folk mood, and I'm like, I'm looking up these artists. I'm like, dude, the 70s and the 80s were like, let's kill all the folk artists in plane crashes. And I was like, this is depressing. It's like, died in a plane wreck. I mean, leaving on a jet plane by John Denver, dies in a plane. It's like, yep. Anyways, that was a nerdy little trivia thing that I had to
share. Even Con Air made that reference as they're singing Sweet Home Alabama.
Yes, yes.
Says, you know, definition of irony, a bunch of convicts singing a song that about from a band that, you know, died in a plane crash.
Oh, okay. Just like a massive nerdy rabbit trail, but I had a friend of mine who his dad was a diehard Lynyrd Skynyrd fan, and they had like this elusive cover. Because remember the cover, the Lynyrd Skynyrd one, where they had the guy shaking hand, but there's another one like the guy's on fire, right?
Yeah.
And so that one, I guess, got pulled. There's one that got pulled. Now I think we all are sort of familiar with that one, but there's a specific one where like the whole band's on fire, and it got pulled because right after the band died and on the plane wreck. Oh man, it was brutal.
Very telling, yeah. It's very eerie.
It's like when people compare like the JFK and the Lincoln assassination, and you're just like, whoa.
I've seen that. That's incredible too. Sometimes there's just so much coincidence. You're like, that can't be.
I mean, but you get sometimes it gets your nerdy kicks. You know, you're like, whoa, what's going on here? What's going on? This is, you know, like,
well, that's the basis for like the best sci-fi.
Oh yeah,
like based on like, you know, somewhat truths or like, you know, half truths or whatever. You know, think about like what you could do with like a Men in Black.
Well, and because we're right now it's close to the 4th, and every like for sure, like, this is the 4th of July movie we watched, Independence Day. And so whenever I think of like, you know, Men in Black, I always go to Will Smith, and all he loves sci-fi, right? So it's just like he's in like everything sci-fi. He's almost in as many sci-fi films like for like actor, like I think as maybe Charlton Heston was in sci-fi films. I mean, just like, it seemed like he was always in a sci-fi film.
Yeah, that's true. That's something I never really thought about. He does do a lot of sci-fi work or supernatural kind of, you know, advanced future. I mean, think about I Am Legend, iRobot.
Yeah. You know. And to me, Will Smith, though, like, I've mentioned this in previous podcasts, is Will Smith is sort of like, he can sort of play any character and get away with it. You know, it's like that saying that Meryl Streep could play Batman and it'd be the right choice. I think I think that Will Smith can play Jar Jar and it'd be the right choice.
He actually would have probably done a better job.
Yeah, he'd be like, all right, it's Will Smith. Guys, dude, it's Will. Like, but anyway, okay, so back to you living in the East Coast, West Virginia. My grandmother is actually from West Virginia, but she has a thick West Virginia accent, so washed and wrenched, and you could really tell where she's. So what brought you over to the wonderful West Coast?
I would say the weather, but that's just one of those answers. I mean, I think, as a 90s kid, most of the cool stuff was all on the West Coast. It was never on the East Coast. There was never anything on the East Coast. Like, if there was, it was, like, maybe in New York City or something like that. But, like, you know, Saved by the Bell and, like, all, you know, just, like, everything took place in California. So, for me, you know, moving out was like, that's where everything is. And so, you know, as I got older, I knew that I didn't want to live, you know, in West Virginia. So I, you know, I set my sights on California. And we moved in right after graduation. We graduated in 2012. I had an extra long college career because, you know, that's sometimes how it happens, but you know, I was a career student, so
so a
like
PhD.
Van Wilder, you know,
a PhD in design.
But you know, right after graduation, we moved out, and we my wife has some family in California. She was actually born in California and moved to West Virginia. So crazy that I actually wanted to, you know, move to California. So, you know, that that was very very interesting. But, you know, after we spent 4 years there, and it just got way too California for us. It's you know, it's weird, you know, I always say it like this, like, you know, it's like Goldilocks, you know, West Virginia was too small, California was too big, and, you know, Portland, you know, Oregon is like right there in the middle.
Nice.
You know, it's like the perfect, you know, everything. It's the, you know, the temperature, everything. So we're really happy with the move.
Yeah.
But if you would have asked me 4 years ago if I would have ended up in Portland, I'd be like, no way. Like, you know, you know, I'd been like, no, I'm going to stay in California the rest of my life. But, you know, rent alone will drive you up a wall. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways it's across the board, but yeah, like, I mean, I love Portland. I was, I've basically been living here for the most part since I was about 14, so past couple decades. A few different stints where I lived outside the country and lived in a few other places, but for the most part I've been in the Portland area. I'm born in Eugene, but I have lived all over the United States. And when I was a kid, though, I lived in the East Coast, like New England area. And I really like Maine, New England, because I feel like it has that sort of Portland climate, kind of like there's lots of trees. It's like, it's visually like the scenery. I love New England. I think it's so gorgeous.
I never got to visit New England while we were on the East Coast, but I will say that all the pictures, you know, that we've ever seen of, you know, the East Coast, especially, you know, Vermont, you know, up towards that area, it's just, it's absolutely, you know, beautiful. And you know, I was listening to the, you know, your previous podcast, and Trace mentioned Stephen King, which of course, you know, Maine, or is it Maine? I'm pretty sure Maine,
Maine, Castle Rock, area
for like all his settings of his thing, which is interesting because they changed the Stand By Me movie to Oregon instead of Maine, but I believe in the book it was actually Maine.
Yes. Stand By Me. Okay, a few different things. Stand By Me, great story. heartbreaking story. I think I had my wife go and we watched it recently because she had never seen it. I'm like, well, you got to be miserable like me. I mean, you guys, like, there's no way I'm the only one that's sad about this movie. But we went to this theater called The Joy, and I'm not sure where you are in Portland, but it's this awesome, like, second run movie theater. And a lot of times during the summertime, they will show old, like, classic movies, like, but they're just second run from, you know, a while ago. I think, like, this weekend we're going to go see Raiders of the Lost Ark. So,
all right.
Yeah, cool. It's, like, awesome, you know. Anyways, but there is so much about, when you watch the movie Stand By Me, like, the scenery that is clearly could be Maine or clearly could be Oregon. I mean, the difference is you could probably swap out all, like, the pine trees for birch trees. But as a kid living in Maine for 2.5 years and then spending most of my life in Oregon, I'm like, dude, they're so similar. The one thing maybe someone could challenge me to find this, but one thing you will not find in the Northwest that you will find in New England is farmhouses that are a couple hundred years old that also have a family cemetery on them. Like, yeah, I was like, and so I remember as a kid, like, why are there cemeteries in your backyard? Oh yeah, it's because it's a farm home. So like, they would be normal. And so I think this kind of resonates with Stephen King's mind, where he's like, just a little creeped out because great grandma's buried in the backyard, right?
Totally. But, you know, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, because we've designated, like death is now not really, you know, I believe, if I'm right, that the living room was often a place where people would have a wake, you know, after you, and so they'd have the coffin there and all that sort of stuff. So it was a little like, ooh. But now we go send it to somebody, and they could kind of take care of that, and then we have a different funeral service somewhere else. So we kind of separate that whole part of our lives about people passing. Sure. But because New England's older, man, there's more stuff, like more history.
Oh, yeah. There's so much history in general on the East Coast, you know, and I'm not saying that there's not history on the West Coast, because sure, there is, you know. I mean, some of my favorite, you know, bits of history, you know, are, you know, the American Midwest and kind of like the Oregon Trail, San Francisco Gold Rush. That's always was like the most fascinating to me, you know, like cowboy times. Red Dead Redemption is one of my favorite games. So, like, the whole cowboy thing is very, you know, I'm into that. But, you know, on the East Coast, like, you know, growing up in West Virginia, we were about, I'm going to say, like, 15 minutes away from Antietam Battlefield.
Oh, wow.
You know? So, you know, there's a lot of Civil War history and, you know, revolutionary history in those, you know, in those areas that this just doesn't exist out here. Yeah. You know, it's just not part of it. You know, this, you know, the land wasn't developed, or, you know, no one went, you know, west at that time. So,
well, we hadn't bulldozed the native culture yet. Oof.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm, you know, my heritage is, you know, Native American.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, that to me, you know, that's one thing that, you know, really, I always tell my wife, you know, when they when we're, you know, talking about something like the Mayflower, and I'm like, well, they moved in. They didn't have, you know what I mean? They just moved into, you know, Native Americans' previous housing thing. So it's not like they had to build houses.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Well, like, okay. So, because you mentioned Civil War, because there's a lot of other things, but have you ever been to a Civil War reenactment?
I believe I have. It's pretty amazing.
Oh,
pretty
it's epic. Yeah, there's one down. I think it's every year. We went to one about 2 years ago down in, like, Kaiser, and it was actually around 4th of July weekend, and it's epic. I mean, it's so cool, because if you get the opportunity, for those listening who haven't been to a Civil War reenactment, it is like, these are nerds. Okay, I mean, they go like the right clothing, the right underwear, like everything, and it's such a show. I mean, seeing those cannons go off, I'm like, that's your 4th of July celebration there. I mean, that is way more intense than anything you're going to see at a fairground or something like that. It's awesome.
It is one of the things they do at Antietam Battlefield, is they have fireworks every 4th of July.
Oh, nice.
You know, on the battlefield, and they bring out, they have a full orchestra, and they have cannons and everything go off, and they even play, like, you know, and they, like, you know, fire off the cannons, you know, it's just, yes. That is, like, super, super cool,
oh,
you know,
that's cool.
And loud, which is, like, you know, totally the point.
Exactly. So, yeah.
I mean, you know, you want to see cannons go off, right? So
yeah. Well, that's like, that's what you're paying for. I mean, it's the over the top. Like, I mean, it's something where, to me, like, I don't go to enough of them, but like these type of, it's almost like another layer of like Ren Faire reenactment. It's like this, like, it's like going to a comic convention. Okay, it's yeah. It's like going to a con, except for this is specialized con. So it's you know, they're so to the letter about what it's about, like this is historically accurate or whatever. And I just feed off that energy. I feed off the energy of people just nerding it up. Just like, it's like, I mean, I have to say, like, I going to the reenactment. We went there because there was a silly episode of Psych where they go to a Civil War reenactment. I'm like, that's not a real thing.
No.
You know, no way it's a real thing. And then we go check it out. I'm like, this is amazing. Then all of a sudden we're like, well, let's get a bonnet. Let's get a musket. Let's get, you know, I wonder if we could try out. It's, I am just a fan. It's like,
yeah, some of their, especially on the East Coast, because it's so... I mean, like, literally the Civil War is so entrenched in that area that a lot of people find bullets or,
wow.
you know, tomahawks in their own backyard.
Wow.
You know, they just find that kind of stuff, like, everywhere, because that's where the battle, you know, the battling
was.
Took place, like, on, you know, in these areas. So, you know, it's pretty amazing. But at the same time, as cool as it is, you know, I went to Shepherd University, which is in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. It's right on the, I believe it's the Potomac River, separating Maryland and West Virginia. And Shepherdstown has such a strict kind of rule on the historic society and whatnot and what can be deemed, you know, historically appropriate, that no one in the town can make renovations or anything like that to their home.
Whoa.
Without the consent of the historic society.
Whoa.
If they're going to, like, replace glass, they have to get, like, authentic glass that's,
oh.
like, you know, the wavy glass that you see, you know, because back in the day, you know, glass
yeah.
wasn't super straight. Like, it was kind of warped and warbly. So that's the kind of glass they have. They don't allow stoplights in
the
area or anything like that, because, you know, they don't want that to take away. So the residents in the like town historic society constantly bite and bicker. So if you ever drive through Shepherdstown at night, you'll notice a bunch of neon signs in home windows.
Oh my gosh.
And that's because it's like the only thing that the Shepherdstown residents can do to kind of like protest.
Oh my gosh.
Like, put these neon signs in their windows. So
oh.
It's hilarious.
Oh man, so the wrong kind of nerds moved in.
Yeah.
So they're like the kind of people that would make you wait in line just because. Oh, that's unfortunate. You know what that reminds me of? Because I watch too much television. You ever watch Parks and Rec?
Oh my goodness, yes. I'm watching it. Well, we're watching me and my wife are watching it together again.
Oh, yeah.
For, you know, probably the umpteenth billion
yeah,
times.
Yeah,
like, seriously.
Yeah, it's great
it's
show.
One of those shows that it's become like The Office now.
Yes.
Just, or Friends. Kind of have it in the background.
Oh, totally. You know, The Office, Friends, and Parks and Rec, you kind of could just throw them at any point. Like it doesn't...
Yeah.
Like the bar, as far as linear goes, meh. I mean, you already know how it ends. So it's like,
exactly.
just throw it up there. But yeah, it reminds me of the time where Leslie is trying to do something about this historical society and that... and just like the backlash she gets from the community, it's like, oh, taken straight from real life inspiration.
Well, that's one thing that really was really interesting, because, you know, coming from such a small town and small area, like Pawnee, Indiana, is a very good representation of, you know, what it's like in those small areas, and, you know, how certain things like fast food places will pop up, or, you know, in lieu of a park or something more community driven, you know what I mean? Yeah. So you're like, oh, like, yay, we don't have to drive 30 minutes to Olive Garden now. Boo, that could have been a park.
Right, yeah. Well, and that's actually, I mean, like, that's one thing that is nice about Portland. It feels like we're doing an advertisement for Portland. But there is so much weird in Portland and so much little, like, niche stuff. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine about how all the food carts, like, you can find the most bizarre food carts. You know, it could be some sort of, like, ice cream Korean barbecue fusion bar, and it's and it's got an app, you know. Like, but that, I mean, it may not last. I mean, but you can try weird trends. And so, like Pock Pock. Have you ever been to Pock Pock?
Oh, yes. That's the only chicken wing that my wife likes. She has chicken wings. She's like, no thank, but Pock Pock chicken wings.
Really?
She is like, that is the stuff right there.
She's like, she absolutely
loves it.
Oh, that's good. I mean, like, I enjoy the food there. Though the problem is I have is the wait. So, like, basically, I have a few different, like, because I don't want to wait an hour and a half to get, you know, food. I'm too hungry. Like, I'll melt down at that point. I have basically the way I think about it. Just agree with me or see if this resonates. When it comes to going out to a restaurant, you have basically five elements. You have location, ambience, service, quality of food, and then I forgot the other one. Darn it. Price. Of those, like, five things, which one do you think is, like, which one's like, okay, I don't, like, this is the most important. If you could put those all together, so location, price, service, quality of food, and then I know I said another one. ambience. I should wrote this down.
So I guess for my wife and I would say we probably prefer, and probably in order, probably price, then quality of food.
Okay.
Then we don't really care about ambience too much. Yeah. I would say service would probably be next. You know, like, if we're going out to, like, you know, to, like, sit down or something, like, I'm like you. I don't want to have to, like, wait for, like, a refill for forever
or something
like that. So, but then again, so I would say probably ambiance is probably last, but then parking or location would be next, because, you know, sometimes parking can be an issue wherever, you know, in any city, you know, parking can be an issue. So you're like, okay, am I going to be able to get there? Like, all right, like, what's it look like? Where's the nearest, you know? So that can be an issue too, because, you know, you might not expect to, like, walk, you know, 5 or 6 blocks
to
dinner or something. So
are you on the east side or the west side?
So we're in Southwest.
Okay. So we're also on Southwest, and I've discovered, and this is probably such a micro nuance that only makes sense to people who live in Portland. But if you use Yelp for, like, a restaurant, I feel, and this, some people might disagree with me, but there's a whole extra star that's added on the west side versus the east side. So, like a 4-star restaurant on the west side is really a 3-star restaurant on the east side. The food is really good on the east side, but there's nowhere to park. So when it comes to our dining experience, like, I usually put location up somewhere in the top two because I'm lazy, right? So unless I can get, like, some, like, it delivered, and, like, and if I have to wear pants, this better be good. So,
I'm with you. I gotta put on some pants. Then,
like, yeah, that's right. because parking's always a pain when you're trying, and downtown's pretty bad. But, I mean, I think this is where, just transitioning, and then we can start. I want, you know, talk more about your art as well. I'm looking forward to self-driving cars where there's the delivery or whatever, you know, the drone that delivers my ice cream and my, you know, just pipes it in. I will probably have a very short lifespan from that. It's like the moment that we have self-driving food, you know.
I know I already don't go out. Like, I'm like a cat. Like, I look outside, but I'm not allowed to leave.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
They don't take me out. Like, so, usually, and, that also comes with, like, having one car. Like, my wife and we have one car between us. So she, I get to work. I have the luxury of working from home and, doing what we do. We don't really have to be anywhere except for behind our computer, which is nice. But,
it's
I do feel like that. I'm like, good, I'm at home. So, if it weren't for the occasional going out to eat, I'd probably never leave.
Well, this is where the podcast for me is my social activity.
Exactly. I do that through gaming every night. Like, I'll get on and play Overwatch. And I'm like, okay, this is my social interaction for...
it gets bad enough to where, like, okay, there are certain games, and this is, my wife is a wonderful person, she's got a great sense of humor, so when I say this, I don't mean to make it sound like she's a curmudgeon, but there are certain games she doesn't allow me to play. And usually they're within, like, the Blizzard type games, like the World of Warcraft or the Warcraft type games or StarCraft, because if I don't have anything on my plate, that's all I'm gonna do. It just whip out the gamer diaper and just like
Mom, bathroom.
Okay, yeah, I'm not leaving. It's really bad. Like, I assume that you, like your wife probably works local. My wife, she has like a normal local job. So when the first few years of our marriage, we rarely spent more than a night away from each other. It was probably if she went to like a bachelorette party or something like that. But occasionally when that would happen, when I'd be left alone, it was 48 hours of gaming and corn dogs. So it's like...
I think that's a wife thing. Like, unless you're marrying like a personal trainer out there, you're going to get a giant teenage boy. Like, we'll be able to train a little bit and get better as long as we go. But really, if it weren't for the women in our lives, we would be eating like, Hungry Man meals every night and
frosting.
We could get at the gas station.
Beef jerky and frosting.
Exactly.
And just like...
What's a vegetable?
That's right. Yeah, I was like, okay, this is another dietary confession. So we used to have, someone gifted us a deep fryer once. Nice. And so it was a bad thing. It was a bad thing. This is before I found out I had diabetes. So we would have like, she would come home and we were like, oh yeah, what are we going to eat? Well, I could just put it in the deep fryer. I'm like, well, okay. Then we would end up starting saving extra food that I would refry and like refry like chicken nuggets. And like, this is bad. Okay. Like, remember when McDonald's was like $5 for 40 nuggets or something ridiculous, right? Basically one bypass right here and it's $5. So, I'm like deep frying everything, and then I start deep frying things that shouldn't be deep fried. Like, well, we just got this Pizza Hut pizza, and it's got the cheese crust. Why don't it's like, deep fried needs a little crisp. So it's like, yeah, it was I think I added a few years to my life by getting rid of that deep fryer. But yeah, that's how unhealthy we're. Like, just games and corn dogs.
Games and corn dogs.
But it's good. They are our better half because they help us to bathe and
bathe.
Scrape the bed sheets. It's like, get up. But yeah, so anyways, I was gonna. Basically, as we're kind of talking about this, we realize we've been having a really good time. It's almost been an hour. Let's talk about your artwork. Let's talk about a little bit of your inspiration, and then maybe you can give some handles where people can find you online.
So I would definitely say, by like looking at my work, it's definitely video games. Like, that's my biggest, my biggest passion. But at the same time, I've gotten more into, certain types of games as I've gotten older, but I still have a, soft spot for those classic games, all the games from NES, Super Nintendo, like Mario and Excitebike and those types of games,
nice.
And then, you know, having things like a Game Boy growing up, you know, that was super, you know, super inspiring to me. So, you know, I that's definitely probably the crux of like most of my work is inspired by video games. But, you know, I'm also big into TV and movies and comic books as well. And I have a big passion for 90s and 80s culture. Like, I love 80s design and kind of 90s culture. And design. I mean, that's, you know, I was born in 87, so I was a true 90s kid, like, you know, through and through.
Nice.
You know, so that to me is like, you know, I really dig that type of like bold colors and kind of, you know, I've tried to stretch myself a little bit more and do more of that. And, you know, so, I mean, most of my work is, you know, it's, Perler artwork, but lately we've been doing more, computer work, like, you know, vector illustrations and prints and that kind of thing. I'm just trying to expand, you know, I think that, you know, there's only so much you can do to separate yourself in the Perler world. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we've talked about that, like, you know, how well you can iron, or I know a lot of people do, huge Perler pieces, and I leave that to those people, because you know, I think for me, one thing for me, you know, especially, you know, as an adult and, you know, trying to make, you know, your artwork your full-time job, you know, you have to do what brings in money. So for me, that's always, you know, as a designer, you know, you were talking about that earlier, that is, design is, you know, solving a problem, whereas art's kind of, you know, whatever you want it to be. And so this kind of, you know, that's really what our art is. It's this bridge between what do people want?
Yeah.
That's what I'm always thinking about. What do people want? What do I want? You know, that's kind of what I think about at the end of the day. What do I want? At the end of the day, if I'm stuck with all this art, I want it to be art that I want to look at.
So, you know what I mean? You got to eat a lot of that. Yeah.
If I sell a single sticker, I will be knee deep in the coolest stickers I've ever, you know, and they're my design. So,
yeah. That's
cool. You know, at the end of the day, like, as long as I enjoy the artwork that I'm producing, you know, that's probably what's, you know, most important to me. So
that's cool.
You know, I think that's what everyone should kind of, you know, go for, you know, do what, you know, in terms of your artwork, you know, don't try and mimic other people, you know, just do what you want to do, do the style that you want to do. If you want to do a certain style one day, do that, you know, try it. So.
Yeah. Well, and that's like a couple things about that. Style is really fascinating because, so with pixel art, you kind of know the limitations. And for people who want to dive into it, it's basically, you know, it's you got to know how to do the math, right? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you can learn, there's lots of resources out there for pixel art, but you know that style. And so say if you went to low poly, or if you went to something more fractal, if you're learning about this stuff, this is the benefit when, you know, having this nerdy conversation with other, basically design educated nerds, because we know that there are specific styles that have kind of made marks on history, and when you look at them, it helps. This is sometimes our color palette. We just look at a few different styles. We don't necessarily have to look at I want to use this material. We just say, what's that style? Ooh, I can try that out or try this out. That's definitely something I think as designers we need to be doing, and we need to encourage other people, but we also need to scratch our own itch.
Yeah, so, totally.
So a couple things before I have you shout out the handles. You said that you are a diehard like video game nerd, and I gotta ask, because you like arcade, do you go to arcades as well? Are you like go to Ground Control or Dave and Buster's?
Yeah, my wife and I, we've gone to Ground Control a couple times, and for those of you who don't know, if you ever go to Ground Control or if you're ever in Portland, go to Ground. It's like an arcade, but they've got every arcade and pinball machine you can pro- practically think of.
Oh yeah.
And it's really cheap. Like,
yeah.
You know, if you go during a weekday or something, or, you know, if you're on like here for the weekend or something, like, I think it was like 25 cents a play or something.
Wow. Yeah.
Which is like, that's really awesome. Cheap. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we definitely go to you know, the arcade, but for me, my thing is first person competitive shooters.
Oh, okay.
You know, I really got into first person shooters when GoldenEye came out.
Oh,
you know,
for great the
N64,
game.
Yes, like, right
GoldenEye.
There,
you know? Yes. Like,
that was, to me, like playing with all your friends, like, there, and you're like, don't look at my screen.
Don't,
like,
yeah.
Don't look at my screen. Dude, that was the best thing. And then, you know, as I got older and got into high school, you know, I got more into music and drumming and that kind of thing.
Oh,
and,
cool.
You know, I still played video games, but, you know, I didn't really play first person shooters other than what I'd play on like my PlayStation 2 or whatever. So, you know, when Xbox came around and, you know, I heard about Xbox Live and I was like, wait a minute, you're telling me that I can play with other people, but I don't have to share my screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
That blew my mind. And that like changed my,
changed
my world. So I've been on Xbox for 12, 13 years now.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's weird, but it's actually longer than I've been with my wife.
She came in, you already had that problem.
I've been doing that, and I started with Halo, and so I really played very, very competitively, and, you know, I always wanted to try and, you know, pursue a professional career in competitive gaming, but it just never lined up with, I had so many passions that it just never kind of, you know, I never developed the right group of guys that wanted to pursue it with me or anything like that. So, you know, and I pursued other things that I'm not regretful at. You know,
sure,
because,
sure.
professional gaming careers don't last very long. I'm not at all sad about the decisions I've made, but, you know, I have kept that competitive spirit throughout the years, and, you know, I've been playing Overwatch since its release, and I am just all about that right now. That is super, super fun and enjoyable for me, and it's different every time, which is, I feel like, something that doesn't really happen with a lot of other games. Like, it gets mundane, you know, playing it. It's like, okay, same mechanics, that kind of thing, whereas, you know, Overwatch, it can really change from moment to moment. You know, I'm not very good with math, but, you know, with 25, 26 some heroes, you know, and six V16s, you know, there's a lot of different combinations of possibilities through there that makes it interesting and exciting every single time. So
that's cool. That's I just want to like talk about GoldenEye. Oh my goodness. GoldenEye, that was the first game I played outside of Doom that I remember the motion sickness from playing it so much, where you get kind of just like, I gotta get this guy. It's like, keep going, and if you've played old school games and you haven't had motion sickness, so you haven't played enough. So, like, I need some Dramamine for this video game. Super. Another short tangent. If we ever hang together at my place, I have a retro bar top arcade. If you dig retro games,
awesome.
I have over 30,000 games on this thing. I mean,
that's awesome.
I have everything. I mean, like, from like ColecoVision to GameCube. It's just like, but, you know, it's you get decision fatigue. You're like, what game to pick? You know, after like scrolling all the Street Fighters,
it's like the Cheesecake Factory of games.
Yes, yes, yes. You're just like, oh, so much. Just pick for me.
Pick for me. Random.
Anyways, Bruno, do you want to give everyone kind of a shout out to where we can find you online? Like where they can check out your awesome nerdy wares?
Yeah, definitely. So if you visit instagram.com/PiercePopArt, cool. You can get it there, or at Pierce Popart. That's PIERCE.
Cool.
pop art. That's I post daily. I've been trying to make it a mission to post every day for a year just to see if I can do it. So I think we're on like day 181, 182 or something like that. So it's going pretty good. I've kept up with it every single day. So I'm excited about that. We're also on Facebook. We're on Facebook through Pierce Pop Art. We have our own website.
Nice.
PiercePopArt.com. It's all the same, so it's pretty easy to check out.
Yeah, yeah.
Pierce Pop Art. If you want to purchase anything, you can always check out Etsy. We're on Etsy, etsy.com/shop/PiercePopArt. So
cool.
We have all our stickers, and we're constantly adding stuff on there. So, yeah.
Right on. Well, thank you so much, Bruno, for coming on. It's always fun to talk to a fellow nerd, and it's fantastic that we're actually in each other's backyard. Little did we know.
Definitely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And just to remember to go forth and nerd.